Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is all of it. You may have seen a video that circulated around Twitter last weekend, which appeared to show presidential candidate Joe Biden repeating a go-to Trump campaign slogan, "You won't be safe in Joe Biden's America." On Monday, it was flagged by Twitter as manipulated media. It isn't the first and not likely the last. Well, some media like this, so-called deep fakes, are silly and benign. You may have seen this example. It's a clip of comedian Bill Hader. He's on a talk show and he's doing impressions of other actors like Tom Cruise and Seth Rogen. And then his face seamlessly morphs into the actor he's impersonating. It is both fascinating and creepy. However, deepfakes have a dark side. They have been described by researchers at FireEye Cybersecurity as having the potential to, quote, generate synthetic media for malicious purposes. In the lead-up to the 2020 election, their prevalence has become particularly concerning, especially as blue-checked Twitter accounts spread these falsehoods. Joining me now to discuss the origins and implication of deepfakes is Tom Simonite. He's a senior writer at Wired, focused on artificial intelligence and its effects. He recently wrote this great piece called "Cheap, Easy Deepfakes Are Getting Closer to the Real Thing." Tom, welcome to All of It.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
So what are the origins of deepfake technology, the technology used to make these deepfakes?
Yeah. The origins are a little seedy, let's say. So late in 2017, a Reddit account with the name Deepfakes posted a handful of short pornographic clips online that featured the faces of women Hollywood actors who had not appeared in those clips. And the the collective behind this account had gathered up some open source machine learning code for working with images online and made a system that could take one video and take an image of someone's face and then morph the face and overlay it onto the video so that, you know, one person could appear in a clip that they never appeared in. And the person behind this account, you know, created these salacious videos, shared a few of them, and then eventually shared their code. And a little community built up around that. And people came around, kind of ran with it, and deepfakes were born.
How easy is it to access this code and the tools that you would need to create a deepfake at this point, today in 2020?
Today in 2020, it's pretty easy, partly because of the community that sprung up around that original deepfake code. You know, lots of people used it just for fun. Mm-hmm. There's a great meme on YouTube where people use deepfakes to put Nicolas Cage in movies he never appeared in. One of my favorites is the Sound of Music. You know, he really can belt out those songs. And in parallel, you know, there's work going on in academic research labs on working with video, because there are lots of legitimate uses for this technology. So yeah, the technology is getting a lot easier to access. If you know a 15-year-old who's pretty good with computers, maybe try and experiment. Ask them if they can make you a deepfake. I would bet that they could figure it out pretty fast.
This might sound like an obvious question, but what is the difference between a deepfake and a shallow fake?
Yeah, this is a great question. And you mentioned the manipulated Biden video in your intro. Mm-hmm. That's an example of what we might call a shallow fake or a cheap fake, mm-hmm. is sometimes the term used. The video was manipulated to be quite convincing in conveying something that did not happen, but it was done with conventional video editing tools. Cut and paste a few clips together, change the soundtrack. I believe they added snoring to one of those, so it sounded like Biden was drifting off. There was a very viral example of a manipulated video of Nancy Pelosi last year where someone slowed down part of it, so her words slurred, and there was a suggestion that she might be intoxicated. Those are shallow fakes, cheap fakes. You know, they're made with conventional video editing. There wasn't this use of machine learning or AI technology to generate the imagery.
And you're going to have to define what you mean by machine learning for the Luddite.
Sure.
Me.
So machine learning is this this neat trick where you can get computers to do stuff not by programming them to tell them exactly what to do, but you show them some examples of what you want to achieve, and the code kind of adjusts itself to do that. And this is very popular with big tech companies, and it works great on images. And it's the reason why your iPhone can automatically make a photo album with all your dog photos in, for example. Or it's how the prototype self-driving cars that are being tested out here in the Bay Area are able to see that there's a stop sign, because they've been showed lots of pictures of a stop sign and told what that means, and then they figure out how to spot them. And in the context of deepfakes, that technology is what makes it possible to morph the face to match the clip that it's being inserted into.
All right, so it's the idea of the machine learning plus the AI together helps bring us to the land of deepfakes?
Yeah, machine learning is like one technique in the world of AI. So
gotcha.
You can think of the terms of, as being loosely interchangeable. And as a the reason that deepfakes are so accessible is in no small part due to how successful this technology has been in the tech industry. You know, there's just been so much more money and so many more brains working on this technology, and that's why it's become widely accessible. And if listeners want to see an example of some of the best, they could just type thispersondoesnotexist.com into their web browser, and that's a website that shows a machine learning system that generates faces of people that do not exist. Every time you refresh the page, you get a new face, and you know, it's quite strange. I mean, they're very real looking. You know, their eyes are gazing out of the screen at you, but they're not people that exist or have existed.
My guest is Tom Simon. And I were talking about deepfakes. He's a senior writer at Wired. What is an example of a deepfake? Which I don't know if there you would know the answer to this. If there's one that's for good. That's there's nothing malevolent about it, that it's a positive.
I'm really glad you asked that, because this technology is a wonderful tool for creating memes or jokes or art or corporate photos, just like manipulation technologies of the past. So we are seeing this technology be picked up by Hollywood. You know, making a good movie is a great reason to be able to want to show something that didn't happen. Out here in San Francisco, there's a startup called Rosebud, which has a really interesting technology spin on deepfakes, really, that generates fashion photos. So they can take a photo of a new dress that a fashion designer made, and then they can synthesize images of people wearing it, you know, people that don't exist, but they look pretty real, and they look nice and slick like a fashion shoot, and you can choose roughly what the person looks like, their hairstyle, their body shape, even their skin tone. And the company likes to say that this could help an online store show a bigger diversity of images of models wearing new clothes, so that if you're shopping for a dress or some other piece of clothing, you know, you're more likely to see someone who looks a bit like you.
Mm-hmm.
So there are plenty of uses for this, and I think we are going to see a lot more deepfake memes over the next few years. And one argument people will make is that is good for the downside of deepfakes, because if more of us get used to seeing deepfakes being used for fun, maybe we'll be better at remembering that they could be used for malicious purposes as well.
Right. As we become more familiar with them, we'll be able to say, oh, I get that that's a deepfake. I can recognize that now. What should we be concerned about when we think about deepfakes?
So a lot of the discussion about malicious deepfakes is around politics. And I think that has been encouraged by politicians themselves. You know, there have been hearings in Congress about deepfakes. And, of course, politicians worry that they will be used on themselves. And so they often steer the conversation in that direction. And that's legitimate. But so far, you know, in the wilds of the internet, as it were, people who study this haven't seen really good evidence that it's being used for political purposes. What we have seen is evidence that deepfakes are used as a tool of harassment, and primarily against women. So women, human rights activists, and journalists have sometimes found themselves being undermined or harassed by pornographic deepfakes, you know, with their faces in. And So it becomes a new tool for some of the patterns we already see mm-hmm. in online harassment.
I always say follow the money. Does someone make money off of this?
That's a good question. A lot of deepfakes we see are made with, you know, open source code. No one's getting paid for that. And as I mentioned, there are companies that are trying to make commercial tools out of this. Mm-hmm. Some of that work is making deepfakes kind of boring. One of the leading companies in this space, you know, they use deepfakes to make corporate training videos. The pandemic has made it a lot harder to shoot that kind of thing. And so they're seeing a lot more interest from companies that need to send out training courses to their employees. As to who makes money from misinformation more generally, that's a much broader question, and, mm-hmm. and it's hard to pin down. There are examples of misinformation campaigns like that was active during the 2016 election that appear to have been carried out by a group called the Internet Research Agency, backed by the Russian state. So we can guess at how the money's flowing there.
The name of his piece is Cheap, Easy Deepfakes Are Getting Closer to the Real Thing. I suggest you read it. It's incredibly interesting. Senior writer at Wired, Tom Simonite, thank you so much for walking us through Deepfake 101.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.